Sunward Sky, Episode 2.8. Evac. What? Meg's voice rang hollow and dead, thudding into the air with all the flat terror that she intoned. Healy, standing and breathing heavily, still in the process of removing his helmet, nodded. Both, he repeated. Meg's mind immediately began to spin. The calc she'd been making for a lack of oxygen still held. Worst case scenario, they had to get everyone out very fucking soon. But she'd been planning on making thruster maneuvers. She couldn't count on that for much longer if the fuel tank was venting as well. She let out a long, tired sigh. Alyssa was breathing hard, almost hyperventilating and dithering around the room looking for somewhere to put her helmet. Healy was clinking around after her, trying to slow her breathing and gently taking the helmet off her to place it in the storage locker that they'd got it from. As if it mattered. The rattling bones of the ship were arrayed around them regardless. One more piece of litter would probably not matter. Meg crossed to the display and began punching in numbers. Behind her, Healy knelt down to Alyssa. She was still breathing hard but starting to come down, and was muttering something to the man. Something about a handle and a puncture. The display came back with a number and it drew the now too familiar graph of broken and failing orbit, pulled up several times by several small bursts of items flung from the rear of the ship. The angle of entry was too steep, the speed of entry too great. She sighed again. Behind her, Healy made to talk, and she snapped. Get out of here, both of you. What? Why? Healy asked. Because, she said, we have no fuel, we have no air, we have maybe two possible ways of being able to eject in escape pods without being burned alive, and it's my job to figure out how, and you're distracting me. There's a quarterdeck at the end of the corridor. Go. Now, she added, when Healy looked like he was going to argue. Fine, he said, and reached down to Alyssa, pulling her up for where she knelt on the ground. She seemed woozy. No wonder, he thought. For someone who'd spent half her life in a research lab, she'd been through a lot. Hell, he was being frayed to his last nerve. They stepped out of the room. The old mechanical keypad clacked as Meg continued to punch data into it, and he could hear her muttering as he and Alyssa headed further along the hall. The quarterdeck was little more than a cot, a small larder of snacks and stimulants, and a comport for the whole ship. They both fit in here, so long as Alyssa lay on the bed. Oh, she said, relaxing into the gel of the safety cot. I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I know. We're going to... Healy struggled to get the words out. We're going down, and a lot rougher than we thought. Elsewise, we're going to have to learn to breathe vacuum.
Yeah, Alyssa said, then sat up a little straighter. Wait, how are you and everyone, how are you going to... on Earth?
Healy looked at her, his features grey. It's not going to be easy. Space palsy has most of us in its grips pretty tight. I'm probably going to do worse, but even yourself would be feeling the effects of it by now. You know, if your science experiment doesn't work. Alyssa nodded. She reached inside her jumpsuit, around the waist, and pulled out the pill bottle. It was clear, and lined with the dust from the ill-formed and powdery medication she'd made for herself. It was still half full.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Healy saw her put it back in her suit. He hoped for her sake that it worked, and started thinking about what he had to do for himself after a long space run. Water suspension tanks, and simple exercises with weak resistance bands, if he was going to be spending any length of time on Earth. If it was only going to be a couple of hours, like when he'd first met Alyssa, he could usually muddle along, if only long enough to wear himself out for the next launch. Unfortunately, it looked like he'd be on Earth much longer than that. And it was worse for others. He knew some long-term spacers who needed lung assistance and pacemakers when they got back to Earth. It was going to be hard. But it was still going to be easier than breathing oxygen that wasn't there.
What do you think? Alyssa said. She'd been talking.
What?
he said. This is going to be an evacuation of the ship. Should we let the rest of the crew know?
Not yet. Meg doesn't have the numbers yet.
We should still let them know. At least that way they know that someone is doing something.
Healy considered for a moment. It was a good idea.
Attention, all crew. The Sunward Sky has sustained irreparable damage and an emergency evacuation will be taking place. However, the timing of the evacuation is critical to ensure the escape is as safe as it can be. We are making preparations now. Please remain in your cabins.
Brett leaned back from the door. Going back to Terra, hey? He said. Is that how they're going to save us? He smirked incredulously. It was met by war. Elise grimaced. We go back to Terra. Most of us won't survive, she said. Her breathing was still labored. The autodock at the medbay hadn't been running at full capacity, like most of the things on the ship since the crash, and Elise was still pale. So was War, for that matter, but she was handling it better. She was right. Some of them wouldn't survive. Whether it was the shock of re-entry or something else, it was going to be a rough ride for the crew on the way down. He tried not to let his eyes linger on her. He didn't really want to know whether or not it was concern for her own life that had driven her to comment. They sat in silence again for a few moments. Brett felt the deathly pall that marked the cognizance of one's own mortality drape softly over the room. The ship was careening through space, and they knew it was when, not if, that they were waiting to find out regarding the ship's crash. He breathed. There wasn't much to do but wait for the evacuation. Elise and War were as tended to as they were going to get, and it seemed pointless to mount another attack on the crew on the bridge now. They were in the same place as each other, working on a plan to make use of the escape pods and get safely down to the ground. There was nothing he could do. Nothing to get his revenge on them for ruining the culmination of his work. They'd get to the life pods just the same as everyone else, and then they'd get in and suffer the same fate as... His train of thought stopped. He looked at War. When we go to the pods, how likely is it that the Terran lot in that cabin is going to be there with us? What do you mean? They'll announce, right? They'll, you know, tell us all it's time to move, but they'll still be figuring out final calculations and all that sort of stuff. Right? War nodded. So? Brett jumped up, mistiming the ship's gravity fluctuations and hovering momentarily off the floor after propelling himself off the ground in excitement. He walked to the shelving at the back of the top lockup and started muttering to himself. He grabbed a long row of hose and a cylinder of something War couldn't see. What are you doing? War asked. Brett told them. She smiled. So did Elise. Shortly afterward, the three of them left the hideout, heading towards the emergency bay. Brett pulled a small trolley along with him. Come on, Meg pleaded. Come on!
The emergency procedure was taking longer to calculate now. She'd had to override all the data inputs for fuel and oxygen, and entered a bunch of other vectors that would gradually push the ship off course into a learning algorithm she'd thrown together on the fly. It had settled on a value that approximated the thrust from the rapidly emptying tanks. Given enough time, she could reverse the calculation and figure out exactly how much oxygen was left. But that wasn't an algorithm she was willing to spend time coming up with, considering that running out of oxygen halfway through the process would rather answer that question on its own. Yet again, she was waiting for a progress bar, and as she watched it clock over, the display updated and showed the new method. One jettison, one fast burn, and the calculated success rate of survival for the escape pods appeared. Her stomach dropped. It was just over 50%. Using what she still had available to her, each escape pod would have an even chance of punching out of orbit and into a safe landing vector. It was the best she could do. She was running too fine as it was and couldn't afford to waste any more time. She pulled out of the bridge,
down the hall to where Healy and Alyssa were holed up. They followed her back to the bridge, where she talked through the strategy. Alyssa just looked dazed, and Healy's face grew darker and darker. "So, basically, it's all we can do," Meg finished, lamely. She was completely drained, and couldn't seem to bring herself to be distraught at the situation anymore. Alyssa spoke up. "Well, if it's all we can do, it's all we can do." Her voice was shaky but firming up. "If there's anything else you need us to do to help?" Meg shook her head. "Nope. I just needed someone to look at what was happening. Needed you to know that I tried my best. I tried my best, I really did." Alyssa grabbed her. I know you did. Nobody in their right mind would say otherwise." Healy nodded. Alyssa continued. "It's all anyone can ever do." Meg breathed in, steeling herself. "All right, we'd best let the ship know. This burn is going to be soon, and once it's done, they can head to the escape bay before the jettison happens." "I'll do it," Alyssa said, crossing to the comm. She looked at the panel for a moment, figuring it out quickly. She thumbed the control, and her voice burst across the ship.
"Attention, all crew. We have calculated a landing vector for the life pods. I repeat, we have calculated a landing vector. Please be aware that there is a further burn required to prepare the ship for its landing. This burn will be starting shortly. Please remain in your cabins until such time as the burn is complete. After this time, you are free to move to the escape pods, which will be launching shortly thereafter."
The rumble from the ship's engines didn't build slowly. It was a rush, a gigantic sprint and leap forward, crushing any unsecured items in the cargo bay. The roar of the two remaining engines and the remarkable amount of stabilization calibration that Meg had done tore through the entire hull. In the bridge, Healy, Meg, and Alyssa pressed themselves against the corner of the room, holding on as their bodies went from having to deal with 1/3 of a G to just over 2. In the cabins, those who were still alive held on, sucked in the protective layer of their beds, torn askew by the fighting forces of the ship's rotation, and thrust in a single moment. War, Brett, and Elise had only just managed to complete their work, and they had shoved their equipment back into a trolley in behind them, just before the burn started. It was only a 2G burn, not particularly hard. It couldn't be any harder. With an uncertain amount of fuel left, Meg had been conservative in her estimates, in an attempt to move the ship into a slightly higher and shallower descent. It was her last stopgap. It lasted for 3 minutes and 54 seconds. The sound died as rapidly as it had begun, and with it the press of everyone's weight disappeared. Elise felt that weight release from her chest, and she lay gasping on the floor. She sucked the air that had been such a struggle to get in, and it caused her to cough as her body struggled to adjust to the way she no longer needed to put in extra effort into breathing. She was dreading the return to Terra. It had been years since she'd spent more than a few hours down there, and she almost always stayed in an immersion tank or a soft gel seat. Full gravity that she couldn't escape hurt. She tried not to think about it as she stood up. Brett was already up. He'd spent a lot more time on Terra than herself or War, and he'd retained almost as much musculature as someone who would spend their entire life dirtside. The press of the burn, though uncomfortable, wasn't as much of a worry for him, and he'd weathered it quite well. They were in the bay full of escape pods. It was a long corridor with a number of circular hatchways. The one closest to where Brett now stood was open, revealing a secondary door. This inner hatch was solid steel, with a robust locking mechanism around the edge, and a heavy set hinge. It was wide enough for one person to crawl through at a time, and its external handle was inset and built out of a dull, burnished metal that glinted coldly in the lights in the corridor. It was the hatch for the pod itself, utilitarian and the smallest size that a person could reasonably fit through, while still holding the structure together of a capsule designed to ram into the earth at terminal velocity. Brett closed this secondary door, the one attached to the ship. This one was larger and had a triple layer of thickened glass inset into a small window. It was tinted, and with the door closed, it was black dark and impossible to see out of. It was an easy way to tell if the pod had been deployed. You could see light through them, the pod wasn't there. He turned the wheel to lock the pod he'd just modified down, and as he did it, the airlocked hatchway into the corridor groaned open. He turned his head. The crew members looked sick, pale, scared. Most of them hadn't been told a lot of what was going on. And now they were being told to evacuate. They stepped into the escape pod bay and stared expectantly at the three members of Project Blackout that were still on the ship. Brett finished sealing the escape pod bay he'd been staring at, then turned to Elise and War. They nodded. He turned back to the other crew members and smiled as they shuffled, catatonic and shivering, into the room. "Hi," he said. "What are you doing?" Alyssa asked. Meg was still sitting at the display, fingers moving furiously over the input pad. "Just checking something." "What?" Healy said, then looked over Meg's shoulder and onto the screen. He stared for a few seconds, then said, "Oh." "Oh what?" Alyssa pressed. Healy seemed entranced by the screen for a moment, but then dropped out of his reverie. Alyssa was starting to feel lightheaded, but didn't know if that was because of the air running out, or if it was just because of everything that had happened.
"There's nothing, Major. It's not going to affect us. But the ship's descent is heading for the ground, not the ocean. Like it'll land just inland of the coast."
"What?"
Alyssa exclaimed. Healy chuckled. "Yeah, it's not ideal. A ship this size would make a pretty sizable impact crater. But it's okay. It looks as though the final jettison can be shunted forward to not long after the escape pods drop, which should shallow out the orbit enough to make the ship land offshore." Healy didn't seem too worried about it, which reassured her somewhat, but still not enough to be completely calm. Alyssa had to control her breathing. She was conscious of the air running out, even if it was mostly in her head at the moment. Meg continued typing, then pressed a button to run the calculation.
"God, this thing is slow," she said, then turned to Healy. "I'm pretty confident."
Time hung in the rapidly toxifying air around them, limp and cold. Nobody spoke while the makeshift computer program calculated. When it chimed that it was complete, the three of them jumped back to run to the screen. Alyssa couldn't pass the information. The graphics were so rudimentary, like the ultra-ret games she'd seen on repurposed cathode rays at an arts fair at the university one time. The looping catenary curves and blinking dots meant nothing to her. Was this how Meg had been prepping their descent this whole time? If so, Alyssa was impressed. When they got to the ground, she owed her more than a few drinks. She studied Healy and Meg's faces, trying to figure out whether the result was satisfactory. They looked grim, but eventually Meg nodded.
"That'll do," she said. "We'd better get to the bay."
The pods held four each, in the same 2+2 arrangement of emergency seating that had been pioneered by carriages and cars. It was another forced design inheritance that Terra continued to work with out of base assumptions and convenience. There were 20 life pods, 80 rafts for a ship that crewed just over 120 at full force. It was so typical, Elise thought as she helped the sick and injured people on board through the nearly two small hatchways in the bay, that in the event of a normal emergency evacuation, a decision would have to be made. Which third of the crew were to be left to die on the spacecraft? Such a decision wasn't necessary in this instance. The remaining living crew were so few that it wasn't even necessary to fill up the entirety of the escape pods. They did anyway. Brett's plan wouldn't work otherwise. So they'd filled them up with one or two crew members per pod, slowly filling the space with the dazed and injured crewmates. The tall, gangly woman who Elise had been helping turned to her. Her eyes were wide, shaking with a combination of shock, hunger, fear,
and space palsy. Her skin was pale, pink and blotchy for a long lack of exposure to sunlight. I don't know if I'll make it, she said, and she sank to the floor. Her legs were shaking so badly that she couldn't stand, and the hand Elise grabbed as she knelt down was astringent, bony. She was probably in her mid-30s but looked a lot older. The shakes from the space palsy were racking her body, and the fear at the thought of being forced back into the higher gravity environment she was now unfit for was causing her latent tremors to amplify. She was terrified. "Look at me," Elise said, and grabbed her shoulders, squaring her up and looking into her eyes. "What's your name?" "Anya." "Okay, listen to me, Anya. Are you listening?" "Yes," Anya said, trying to look away. Elise redirected her gaze to stare at her again. "Okay. You're going to be okay. You've not spent much time dirtside for a while, but that's alright. They're going to know we're going down. When you get to the ground, the gravity is likely to make breathing hard. Ask for adrenaline, an immersion tank, and a steroid treatment. Alright?" Anya nodded. "What are you asking for?" Elise repeated. "Adrenaline, steroids, and immersion," she said. "Good. Now you've got your own pod here. You'll be safe." "I hope," she didn't add, before helping her crawl into the pod. Once both hatches were sealed, Elise turned to Brett and War. There were three pods remaining without any other crew in them. Elise and Brett went into one. War crawled into the other. Meg led the way, and she thumbed a timer on her suit. Alyssa and Healy stumbled slightly as the low thud of the first escape pod dropping ricocheted down the ship. "That's one," Meg thought, and pressed forward. The air was definitely starting to taste staler. She didn't have a CO sensor, but she didn't want to think about how many parts per million in the air consisted of dangerous toxins already. She fought the urge to quicken her step. They still had several minutes to get to the escape bay. As they hurried along, she counted the pods as they dropped. She had no idea how many people had survived, but she was relieved to see so many dropping. With each escape, she tried to block out the calculated success rate of the landing and the fact that, statistically, only half of any surviving crew were likely to survive the shock of the impact. Anything was better than nothing, and she'd worked hard to even get the number as high as it was. She could be proud of that, she hoped. The 19th pod dropped, just prior to them entering the bay. Meg went first, followed by Alyssa, and then Healy. A small trolley was in the corner, with some equipment she didn't recognize, but her eyes were only on the sole remaining pod. Through every other window, the harsh remains of blunted sunlight streamed and cast a spatter of golden light on the raw steel of the floor. The door closest remained dark. She headed to it. It was done up tighter than she expected, and her arms began to burn with fatigue a little faster than she'd expected. The oxygen must be starting to run low, she thought. The hatch finally gave. "Meg," Healy said. His voice sounded far away as she pulled on the heavy steel. She ignored him, focusing on the task at hand. "Don't, Meg," he said. "It's too late." She didn't process the words immediately, and felt the locking mechanism of the outer hatch click into place. She was almost completely turned around to the first hatchway when she registered what Healy had actually said and looked up to face him. His face was set in a hard line, and Alyssa was squatting on the floor next to the trolley. A length of hose connected an unlikely-looking handheld object to a gas bottle and a small but powerful ion battery. She caught hold of the tangy scent in the air, and the block of solid rod stowed in the cylinder on one side of the trolley melted and burned at one end. She spanned back to the door, and in the dark, burnished steel, there were the rich purple and black residues of burn marks, with several bright chrome scars along the edge of the seal in the inset hatch. The hatchway had been welded shut.